Cabarets. I know it's a musical, but how many cabarets have you been to actually in person to see a show? We're going to talk to someone today who's performed at cabarets and is going to be performing here in St. Louis coming up on St. Louis in Tune. Welcome to St. Louis in Tune. Thank you for joining us for fresh perspectives on issues and events with experts, community leaders, and everyday people who are driving change and making an impact that shapes our society and world. I'm Arnold Stricker with Mr. Mark Langston. He doesn't know whether I'm going to say Mr. or effervescent or
I know.
The incomparable.
I never know what that adjective is. Is it an adjective or a verb?
It's the incomparable. It'd be an adjective.
Adjective. There. Okay, good. I'm not. I didn't totally sleep through.
No, I lost it when they started talking about predicate nominatives.
Oh my gosh!
I was like, what? And I just speak English. No.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, we're going
dangling
to
dangling participles and
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
All of that.
Diagramming sentences.
No, don't start.
Return to civility, folks. We need to return to civility in our society, and here's an assistance to do that. Take a walk around your neighborhood. Oh. Meet your neighbors. Ask strangers how they are. That might be a little... Help those who might need some assistance. That's a good one. And share lots of smiles. Always a great one, smiles. All while working off a few calories. I know sometimes when you go to different cities and you smile at people or you say hello and people look at you like, what are you talking to me for?
Yeah.
You know, what's your problem? I don't talk to strangers.
Yes,
and,
yes.
Or in St. Louis, people are pretty warm and friendly.
Yeah.
But you go to Chicagoland, man, look at you like
grouches.
They got three heads or something.
Grouchy people.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to say.
So take a walk around your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And while you're shedding a few pounds and a few calories, you can meet some neighbors and help people out.
I always talk to folks, Arnold.
I do too.
And my kids say, Dad's making friends again.
That's what ours is. He loves to talk to everybody. That's why we're in radio.
I know.
Besides,
we have the
faces for radio.
Yeah,
too.
We sure do. All right, that's for sure.
Somebody who's got a face for cabaret, Amy Jo Jackson is... a performer, playwright, composer, lyricist, and glitter alien who's based in New York City. She's a recipient of the 2022 Bistro Award for the Brass Menagerie, and along with a helper, musical director Brian Nash, they received the 2023 EST Sloan Commission for Grace Bliss and were a 2022 finalist for the Jonathan Larson Grant. She's going to be performing May 15th and 16th at the Curtain Call Lounge for a cabaret performance. Amy Jo, welcome to St. Louis in Tune.
Hi.
Wow. You know, you're doing this Celebration of the Diva, and this is in coordination with the Tennessee Williams St. Louis Festival.
Oh, nice.
And tell everybody, what can cabaret goers expect in this performance of the Celebration of the Diva?
Sure. First of all, it's at its base level, it's just an excuse to sing a bunch of great songs made famous by fabulous in music and theater. That's the excuse for it. But then my music director Brian Nash, who I've been collaborating with for, it'll be 10 years in September, we've been doing cabaret together. We're really nerdy about very specific niche things. Like, why do we call someone a diva? Versus, like, why is that person a diva, but that person is, like, not a diva? Or they're a musical icon, but are they a diva? People get very granular in my circles of weird performer friends. Okay, that person is an actress. Is she a star, though? Okay, that person's a star, but is she an actress? These kinds of things. So we've had a lot of fun putting the set list together, going, okay, we love Dolly Parton. She's an icon. She's a genius, but she's so approachable. She's like the anti-diva. So actually, she's not a diva. We can't have her in the show. So this is the kind of stuff that we're just going to be like talking about and breaking down, but mainly just singing a lot of fabulous songs. So that's the conceit for this show.
I love that you said that like that, because it was like, how do you decide who's a diva, who's not? Is it based upon personal relations, or I watch them in the movies, or I've read about how nasty they are?
My head was spinning. when she was I wanted to know what Amy Jo was. Are you a diva or an actress?
Here's the thing. What we've been talking about going through this show and talking about Brian and I going, okay, what are the different elements that comprise it? And one of the big things that we've decided is singularity of like talent and voice. Like you hear that person on a recording from another room and you're like, that can be nobody but Cher. That's nobody but Judy Garland or Aretha Franklin, what have you. So that's one of them. And then there's the element of mystery. And that's where I feel like a lot of contemporary singers, because we're all on social media and there's a certain kind of appreciation for that proximity and for approachability today, that the mystery element is gone in a way that like in the 60s and 70s, it was like, sure, we know a lot about Judy Garland, but we'll never know the woman. Whereas if she were alive today, we'd be seeing pictures of her, you know, posted around doing whatever in a way that really dilutes that. So I would say I play a lot of diva-type characters. My persona on stage is very grand. Like, the show is called Grand Dame, A Celebration of the Diva. I tend to do a lot of that kind of grandeur, a lot of villainesses, a lot of, I'm also 6 feet tall, so, you know, I've been playing like larger than life people and creatures for my whole career. So I would say I have a lot of diva elements, but I think I'm a very approachable, warm person, which might take me out of the running, but maybe not in certain contexts.
So you weren't type.
Is that a wishy-washy enough answer?
You weren't typecast then.
I like to think not, but then it is funny though. Like when people see me on stage before they have met me, or depending on what they see me do on stage, I've had people like tell me like years later, "Oh, I was so scared of you. Like I was very intimidated by you." Because I'm very tall and I have a loud voice and my persona has a grandeur to it. I'm like, oh, that's funny. I'm really just a little musical theater weirdo who likes drag queens and like dresses like a rainbow threw up. Like, I'm not actually an intimidating person, but I do think there is something about the material that uses, which is another element of a diva. It's like the selection of material is a lot about crafting the persona and the kind of impenetrability of that for some people.
But you're an employed theater person.
Right.
Sometimes.
Now, you wrote this particular cabaret?
Yeah, so I would say, cabaret is like a very big form in New York. There's certain pockets where there's a really lively cabaret scene, and I'm very fortunate to be like very much a part of it in New York. This is more of what I call like a pretty traditional cabaret show in that it's like some banter and some songs. I didn't write any of these songs. There's no original material. Like that's part of the point is that it's like people that we're familiar with celebrating these iconic women. If I was at the Williams Festival last year doing my show, The Brass Menagerie, which is a Tennessee Williams themed show. All and right. So I did write that. That was a combination of actual Williams text and then musical theater and some pop songs that I then rewrote all the lyrics to be from the perspective of the characters in the Williams play. And that was much more structured. That was much more of a play in a cabaret setting. So people, if they came to last year's, can expect a much more relaxed just night of music and chit-chat, which is a very common form, I'd say, of cabaret. Something a little less high concept and a little more just, we're all just like jamming in my living room, and my living room happens to be the Curtain Call Lounge tonight kind of vibes.
And you got an award for that Brass Menagerie also.
I did, yeah.
That's congratulations about that.
Thank you. I'm very proud of it. It's one that I just had an idea for. I'm a two-actor household. My partner's also an actor, and he and I were sitting on the couch one day just joking about Ethel Merman like you do in a two-actor household. And we're like, oh, wouldn't it be great if Ethel had been Amanda, the mother, in the Glass Menagerie? He's like, yeah, you could call it the Brass Menagerie. And we were like, wait a second. And we started making a playlist. And several of those ideas wound up in the final show. It was just so dead on. I was like, I know what it is. This is the thing. And then as I started working on it, I ended up building it out a lot more. I didn't anticipate doing so much actual writing, but I'm very glad I did because it really allowed me. This is the thing that I love about cabaret, is that cabaret allows a singular performer, like meaning someone who is maybe not quite so cookie cutter by industry standards, to lean into all of the beautiful things that make them tick and that show them off in a way that like a traditional book musical that someone else wrote not with that little gentle weirdo in mind, might not. Like, I'm going to go do a production of Cabaret in North Carolina this, and I'm selling costs, who's a supporting role. And that's a great role for me. I'm going to have a chance to shine, and I'm going to have a lot of fun. But I got to play 9 different Tennessee Williams characters in that show. I got to really stretch my wings and flex my virtuosity in a way that most shows just don't allow for. So that's one of the things that I and a lot of people who do cabaret, like, as more than, there are people who, like, I'll put together a cabaret and do, like, a concert. And then there are a lot of us who are, like, cabaret artists who consider ourselves, like, people who are like, I'm a lifelong practitioner of this form at this point. Like, that's just what I'm going to be doing. And that's part of the draw. It's, okay, what suit do I want to put on today, so to speak?
Now, this is going to be a debut performance of this particular show, correct?
It is, because the Williams Festival, this year their theme is Life Upon the Wicked Stage, and they're doing a bunch of Williams short plays that are centered around show business. So when I was approached by the festival about coming back this year, they were like, do you have anything like to this theme? And I was like, what about something like this? What about something that celebrates basically of femme performers in the industry? And also is very, like, in the pocket of what I like to do and very different from what I did last year. So, yes, so this will be an all-new show debut in St. Louis, and I'm very excited to do it.
That is exciting because, you were talking about that, and as I was prepping for the show in the last couple of days and looking at cabaret, what I would call cabaret theaters or places to perform around the St. Louis area, I don't really know that there are any. It used to be the old dinner theaters that we had several of those. But not there are in New York, not like the, let's see, where is it here, Joe's? And
there's Joe's Pub. Yeah, that's a famous spot. The great thing about cabaret is you can do it just about anywhere. An intimate venue is better. If you ask me, just being able to make eye contact with the people in the audience is really helpful. But I would say Judy Garland at Carnegie Hall was doing like a hybrid between concert and cabaret because she's a type of performer, classic diva. She's a type of performer who can make everyone in that audience feel like she's being directed to them and only them, even if it's the size of Carnegie Hall. But I would say overall cabaret as a form really thrives in a more intimate setting. So like really any venue set up even vaguely for music. I've done cabarets outdoors, which I don't recommend, but it can be done. Like you can, it's a very adaptable form. All you really need is whatever instrument you're using. For me, it's usually Brian on keys, and sneak us into any little old corner and we'll make it work.
Why have those survived, or I should say maybe flourished, in cities like New York and I'm sure in Chicago, but not like here in St. Louis or maybe some other communities? Is it just because of the demand or the performers or a combination of both?
Yeah, I think it's a combination. I think part of it is in cities that have a strong concentration of artists where I love New York. I would choose to live here anyway, but I also live here because this is the best place to seek employment for what I do. Everything auditions in New York. And then, for instance, like I said, I'm going to North Carolina to do a show, but I auditioned for that in New York. So that's, Chicago is similar. And there's a lot of work in Chicago. There's a lot of work in New York, but it's also a place where you live to then go do the jobs wherever they are. So I did 2 shows out of town last year. I was gone for 7 weeks at a time. That's just how the industry works. So you have a lot of people who are either out of work or, let's say, underemployed. A lot of us are underemployed, not unemployed. I have plenty of gigs and stuff, but it's not necessarily stuff that's always like maximizing your full curiosity and attention. And so there's a lot of creative energy rumbling around New York, I'd say. And because you're also like, it's so possible to go see so many things, you can't walk down the street without tripping over someone like playing the guitar or passing a drag show in a bar or whatever. It's very easy to get creatively charged by all the other creatives around you, which creatives like to make things. So I do think it's partially that you have this high concentration of people who are constantly like being inspired by one another and also wanting to demonstrate their skills that lead a lot of people to cabaret. And then I do think there's just an audience for it here because people are used to it. I think there are probably cities where cabaret would do quite well if there just was any kind of scene for it or if people like were in the habit of doing it. I think that might be the kind of thing where it's like some theaters regionally have a smaller space where they'll produce like a concert series. And I would say a lot of those small concerts groceries are we just cabarets that they've called concerts because that is like what the market is used to. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, but I think it's a combination of like,
people
come to New York to see things mm-hmm. and people live in New York to do things. So right. it's a good yeah. melting pot for that.
It makes perfect sense. And do most of those, I think it's Joe's Pub and 54 and Below, they serve food. Are most of the cabarets places that you perform or that you like to perform in? Is it food and drink and show?
Yeah, I would say the big places currently, because places open and close, are Joe's Pub, 54 Below, a place called the Green Room 42, and then there's like Birdland and Cafe Carlisle. And I've not performed at Cafe Carlisle, but all of those places you can get food and drink. And it's like meant to be an elevated experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like 54 Below is the old Studio 54. It's in the space where Studio 54 okay. was. And so they've redone it to look very Art Deco, tin ceilings, this kind of vibe. Oh. So you're meant to like go out there and have an evening of it. There are places like the Duplex, which is a famous gay bar next door to Stonewall down in the Village that has a cabaret space on the second floor where I've performed a lot. And that's just drinks. They don't do food. They're not bothering with that. They're like, we want to like encourage a low ticket price and encourage like people to come out and be able to see something. And then there's a two drink minimum, but the drinks aren't like fabulous fancy cocktails that cost $15 a pop. It's a little more accessible.
Now, you've been working with Brian, you said, for 10 years. How did you meet him? And it seems like you guys have really clicked as far as being able to interact with each other, especially during a show, as I watched that on YouTube.
Brian's the other half of my creative brain. And when you meet someone like that, you don't let them go. Brian actually plays for, he's got quite a few people in his stable of people that he plays for consistently, because he's just, he played in piano bars for years and years, so he's so fast on his feet and on his fingers, as it were. He is not even a step behind me in my brain. If like, you start to like riff on something like in the banter, he will then be there with underscoring that like heightens the joke in a way that was never discussed. He's just brilliant and also the nicest man. We met informally at this piano bar show that he used to play Friday night for truly a dozen years called Mostly Sondheim, and it was like an open mic night thing with a few people that I'm now friends with. But he would just go and sing something high and loud and probably badly because it was 1 o'clock in the morning. So I met him informally there, but then we did a concert reading together of a show that shall remain nameless because it was bad. But we met and the cast was lovely and we met and really clicked. And then we ended up getting, we did this concert together. Like he was just the MD for it and I was like put on the bill and the director really liked me and was like, what are your thoughts about me helping you build like a cabaret for you? And that's been something I'd been thinking about doing for ages, and it seemed like an insurmountable task. And I was like, that sounds great. He's, what do you think about using Brian that we use as a contract? I was like, oh, I love Brian. That would be great. And then like it became very clear, we were just talking about this the other day, that the director, while lovely, like I didn't need that after the first show. Brian was like the creative brain to bounce things off of, and to like often you'll use a director to basically funnel out your bad ideas. And Brian is like, we're like that. We're like, is this a thing? Let's try this. Okay, that's not a thing. What if it was a thing for this? And we just try to make each other laugh. And that's my favorite kind of creative collaboration, is just trying to make the other person laugh. There's plenty of stuff we wanted to put in the show for St. Louis, and we're like, there were things that were just like too niche, like too in jokey. We're like, well, that's maybe if we do this for the New York show, but we're just like making each other cry laughing with like stupid jokes about a chorus line that like nobody cares about, but like we're having a good time.
So yeah, that was a question I had. How do you determine some of the dialogue that you're going to use and the songs? Because you've got like Fanny Bryce, Stevie Nicks, Judy Garland, Shirley Bassey that you're going to be choosing from. There's thousands of songs there. How do you?
Well, we started with stuff that I already do. We're like, what do we already have that fits the vibe? And then we picked a few songs that I have done over the years, either in the cabaret or just like, often you'll get asked to come onto a show and do two songs. So what do I already know that kind of feels like in vibe, and we'll see if we want to build out from there. And then we basically just did we were having the conversation that I was just like explaining to you about, okay, I love this song. The song is giving slight diva vibes, but is the person that represents it, does it fit the vibe of the show? And then it became also about building. I love building a set list. This is the only kind of math I like. This is just moving things around and feeling flow. I'm very big on what's the journey I'm taking the audience on, but not in a literal like, and next, this happen. Like, I don't, that's not my jam with cabaret. I don't like to be, I don't like to have my hand held. I like to understand the story based on, not even story is such a strong word, the emotional journey, just an arc, or like how we're going to all go through this evening together and come out on the other side, and whether it was like a really emotional evening or whether it was just like, oh, that was a really nice time. There's flow to that, and that's important. And so then it becomes, okay, we have too many slow songs in a row. We love this song, but I guess that one has to go, and we need something. So we moved some stuff around, and then we're like, okay, what goes in this slot then? And it was just like going through lists and going through our music collection and thinking through stuff. And often it'll be like one of us will suggest a song. That won't be the one, but it'll make us think of another one. It's just a lot of that. It's a lot of list making over time.
Wow.
And that's, but I love that part. That part, some people like hate building a set list. And like when I host something, often I'm like, can I build a set list instead of the producer? Because usually the producer's got a lot more stuff to worry about. I'm like, if I'm in charge of making sure that everything is continues to move forward as the host, where you're like, I just want to keep the energy up. I'm like, I can help you with the set. Let me do it. I really enjoy that part. To me, that's the exciting part. That's where the alchemy is. As far as banter, it really depends on the show. This is going to have a bit of banter that is, I wouldn't even say memorized. With a cabaret show, I don't like it to be
more improvisational,
too rehearsed or sound too rehearsed. Yeah, oh, yeah. I like it to feel conversational and mm-hmm. spontaneous, and I basically like, I'll work off bullet points and then I'll just talk through them until I can like be like, what is it I'm really trying to say? Because I am, as you may have noticed already, verbose, sometimes excessively so.
Great word. I
kind of have to winnow it down. I do love a word
like verbose is good, prolix is good, same thing. Prolix means verbose.
Okay. That was your word for the day.
I will be.
Have you ever changed songs in the middle? I'm not going to sing that. And you turn to Brian, let's do this one.
Not in the middle of a set. Although I see people do that all the time and I'm never bothered by it. It depends on the performer. There's one performer who I'm very good friends with who's also one of Brian's people that he plays for. And she talks... You think I talk a lot? She, like, when she's on stage, it's deranged in the most beautiful, chaotic way. So she often has to cut things because she's talked for too long, or she's made up a song about a visit to the doctor she had that day, which I have seen her do, with Brian just, like, coming in and making stuff up underneath her. So they'll often cut stuff and move stuff around just because they have to get out of the space. For me, I have changed one song day of kind of thing. We've been like, okay, we're going to do this. But I like to be set so I can just focus on being present and mm-hmm. not think about, oh, what's next. I like that kind of, I like to rehearse so that I'm just like, that enables me to just release and just do the song down and not be thinking too hard about.
That's your conservatory structure. Background.
That's my conservatory background. You'd be surprised how many people I went to conservatory with who did not like to rehearse.
It seriously.
Was only me being like, hello. Yeah. Oh, you got a bunch of 19-year-olds who did theater in high school and then are like, oh, maybe I don't have the discipline to do this professionally. And I was like, excuse me, when are we going to rehearse our scene from Kismet?
Yeah, that's the difference between those who have jobs and those who don't.
There you go.
And I think a lot of them, like a lot of those people left and found other avenues of the business. And good for that, where they can be... And probably have more stability than I do in this lunatic industry I make my living in.
I don't know. You can see Amy Jo Jackson May 15th and 16th at the Curtain Call Lounge. Tickets are $175. The 16th performance is $50. Go to twstl.org/tickets-cabaret. We'll post that on the show notes. Amy Jo, thank you for coming on the show. And you can catch AmyJoJackson.com. Amy Jo Jackson, just JoJackson.com. Mm-hmm. Amy, thanks for coming on the show
today. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
Look forward to seeing you.
I feel like I just did a 50-yard dash, Amy Jo.
And I would have loved to seen Mark run that.
Me too, I know. Amy Jo, thanks.
You take care.
Yeah, thanks so much, Amy
thank
Jo.
Thank you so much.
Right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Wow, Mark.
She's something.
She is. This is Arnold Stricker with Mark Langston. We'll be right back on St. Louis in Tune. This is Arnold Stricker of St. Louis in Tune on behalf of the Dred Scott Heritage Foundation. In 1857, the Dred Scott decision was a major legal event and catalyst that contributed to the Civil War. The decision declared that Dred Scott could not be free because he was not a citizen. The 14th Amendment
also called the Dred Scott Amendment, granted citizenship to all born or naturalized here in our country and was intended to overturn the U.S. Supreme Court decision on July 9, 1868. The Dred Scott Heritage Foundation is requesting a commemorative stamp to be issued from the U.S. Postal Service to recognize and remember the heritage of this amendment by issuing a stamp with the likeness of the man Dred Scott. But we need your support and the support of thousands of people who would like to see this happen. To achieve this goal, we ask you to download, sign, and share the one-page petition with others. To find the petition, please go to dredscottlives.org and click on the Dred Scott Petition Drive on the right side of the page. On behalf of the Dred Scott Heritage Foundation, this has been Arnold Stricker of St. Louis In Tune. There goes Mark. He's 30 yards into the 50-yard dash. Welcome back to St. Louis In Tune with Arnold Stricker and Mark Langston.
Boy, I'll tell you what. Amy Jo. I think the name fits her well.
She has a ton of energy, which would really make her shows just vibrant and exciting to see.
Good word for that, vibrant. Yeah.
You can see her, folks, at the Curtain Call Lounge. That's in the Grand Center District, and it's perfect for that cabaret show, May 15th and 16th. The 15th, doors open at 6:30. Mm-hmm. Show starts at 7:30. Tickets are $175. The 16th performance is general admission. That's $50. At the May 15th show, there is food, some food mm-hmm. involved with that. You can go to twstl.org/tickets-cabaret. And speaking of the festival, they're doing events kind of, I don't want to say all year round, but all summer. They have quite a bit of year-round programming. This is the 9th annual festival. The performance this year, August 8th through the 18th, is, get this, I would say, I should have told you this earlier, Mark, drum roll, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. Mark and I went to a performance that was outside. And
that's
it was
a classic.
Great.
Oh, yeah.
So that particular, it's a Pulitzer Prize winning mm-hmm. drama, so you don't want to miss that. Also, during that time, they do some commentary conducted by the resident scholar Tom Mitchell. Mm-hmm. And then they also do some kind of three one-act plays that are going to be putting on. I know Amy Jo talked about that a little bit. There's a reading of Stella for Star, which is an adaptation of the first award-winning story by young Thomas. There's a walking tour of the Grand Center Theater District.
I like that.
Yeah, there's a late-night open mic going to be happening. Then there's a tribute reading, a celebration of Tennessee Williams. And then July 7th, there's a pool party.
Ooh.
So that's
good. It'll be warm out.
Yeah. A pool party. Tennessee Williams pool party.
I can't imagine.
So you can, for all of that, you can get tickets on MetroTix, or you can go to twstl.org, twstl.org.
Mm. Wow.
We've had Carrie on lots of times, mm-hmm. who's the executive director, and she put together the Tennessee Williams St. Louis Festival. And they have received a lot of great awards.
I had never been to one of the festivals, one of the performances, until we had interviewed someone and you made arrangements for us. Yeah.
Yes.
And it was really great. I highly recommend it.
It is great.
It's a wonderful night out, mm-hmm. and especially when we did it, it was an outside performance.
Right.
In the back of a building where
Tennessee Williams grew up.
Yeah. And a lot of the performers stay in that building.
Right.
So they just came out the back door. It was really great. It was one of the most memorable and enjoyable performances I've seen.
Yeah, and it really ever. Brings, because he's got that St. Louis connection.
Yeah.
It really brings kind of St. Louis and theater drama together mm-hmm. in a great way.
Yeah, yeah. Take the time.
Yeah, it's a great experience.
Looking for something different to do. Come on. I mean, it's like, you'll enjoy it.
Yeah. So twstl.org. O-R-G. I can't talk today for some reason. And then Amy Jo Jackson, it's J-O for Jackson, amyjojackson.com. She also has a YouTube site, and I know that you can get that from her website, but it talks about some of the things that she's done, and you can see a little bit about her performances there. One of the things, Mark, about her YouTube site is at Amy Jo Jackson. Hmm. these dinner clubs. Mm. I remember as a kid, they used to have a couple dinner clubs. There was one up north.
Yep.
There was one down south.
Yep, I remember.
And
those.
You would sit, and one had a turntable in it. I saw the Count Basie band play there, and they played in the round that. And you could eat, and we don't have that anymore. I don't know that we have a quote-unquote kind of cabaret setting here at all where you can get these ones we talked about. Joe's Pub. It's one of six performance spaces within the Public Theater in New York. It's a music venue. It's a restaurant. And they have live performances, a lot of different kind of genres, modern dance, world music. That venue hosted Amy Winehouse and Adele when they made their U.S. headlining concert debuts. And it was one of the 10 best clubs in America declared by Rolling Stone.
Joe's Pub.
Joe's Pub. And then the other one we talked about with Amy Jo was 54 Below Broadway Supper Club. It's got a lot of Broadway's best performers performing there, world-class dining, elegant setting. They won the 2022 Tony Award honor for excellence in the theater, and the club is known as Broadway's Living Room.
And it's the old
Studio 54.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, it is. They have three shows nightly, can accommodate up to 140 people.
Wow.
Tables are no more than 24 feet from the stage.
Wow.
And that's when you've got a real intimate, where the performer and the audience can interact visually and through.
You're right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see why she would really love that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. I went to a performance of 12 Angry Jurors, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And it was an on-stage performance where you sat. It was very intimate. They had chairs on stage, and the audience sat on stage around the performers. It was really something.
That's cool.
Yeah. So those intimate venues are just wonderful to go to.
Yeah.
Should really make time to go, really.
I wish we had something like that, or maybe we do, and I just don't. I'm not aware of it.
I couldn't tell you where that would be, but
maybe it's the place where she's going to be performing, which is, again, the Curtain Call Lounge.
The Curtain Call Lounge. Never heard of it.
I don't know if that's part of I know it's up in Grand Center Land, up there by the Fox and by the Powell Hall, and what else is up there?
The Powell Hall Fox? I don't know.
Yeah, there's down on Grand. I can't remember right now. My mind's just like a tornado going on there.
There's a lot going on in that area.
Yeah, I don't say anymore. My hard drive's spinning. I say I'm buffering.
<You're> buffering.
Like the computer.
A little better working memory is what you buffering. Need. Okay. Okay.
Do you have some days of the day, Mark?
This one is for you, the first one, right out of the box. National Teacher's Day.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know that?
Yeah, it's Teacher Appreciation Week, I think.
Is it? The whole darn week is?
The whole darn week.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we should be appreciating our teachers way more than we
do,
I would think. Yeah, and it always got me how people think that teachers should bring up your kids.
What?
They do. They say, why isn't that teacher teaching my kid how to do this and that? Because that's something you should do at home.
That's right.
National Shrimp Day.
Shrimp?
Do you like shrimp?
Only if it's wild caught in the Gulf.
Oh, wow.
I'm particular.
Yeah?
I don't eat farm-raised shrimp.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, interesting. National Golf Day?
Yeah.
You ever?
I haven't played golf. I was at Topgolf.
Oh, that's right.
Several weeks ago.
Oh, you were?
That's fun. That's
There's
fun.
Two now. There's
yes, there are.
The one in the city? Is that the one you went to?
Yes.
You didn't go to the one out in the valley?
No, I didn't want to travel all the way out to the hinterland.
To the hinterland. I know it. Trust Your Intuition Day. How's your intuition?
It's pretty good.
You got a good gut?
I would call it, Trust My Gut Day.
Trust Your Gut Day?
Yeah.
Yeah. National Small Business Day?
Okay.
All right. We shouldn't forget the small businesses. They're, I don't know, where
they make the everyday work.
Wow, that's
you can't use that. I'm going to copyright that small business.
You better do it quick. I really don't know where some of these come from. National Ship Via Rail Day today.
Must be something that Santa Fe.
Somebody missed it somewhere. I don't know what that any of that could be. National Eat What You Want Day.
So I do that every day.
Do you? It's the seafood diet, right? Oh, yeah. Food, you eat it.
That's right.
World Migration Bird Day. There's a good one. Aw, Birth Mother Day. All right. I know my birth mother, actually. Brunch for Lunch Day.
Brunch is huge in Kansas City.
Oh, is that right?
On Saturday, Sunday, it's unbelievable. You can't get in a place.
No, but St. Louis used to be, and then it got away. And then I had trouble finding a good place for brunch.
It is tough.
In St. Louis.
They don't advertise like in Kansas City. It's like the thing to do.
Is that right?
Yes.
Instead of church.
Yes. On Saturdays, you got to get there early.
Oh, it's a Saturday thing?
Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, wow. Right? Okay, that's neat. Dog Mom Day.
Dog Mom Day.
Yeah, that's Amy. That's your wife, Amy.
Okay.
Yeah. Dog Mom. Get ready to celebrate being a mom to your cute pups.
There you are.
On Dog Mom Day.
Dog Mom Day.
Hostess Cupcake Day.
Oh.
Never got it. Did you? I know. Let's see. National Babysitter Day. Yeah.
Babysitters are an essential worker.
Yeah.
For families.
Yeah. Let's see. We have just a couple more here. Why? National Stay Up All Night Day.
Yeah. Why? Because you're cramming for finals?
Why? Yeah, maybe. Here's another one. Where did it go? National Twilight Zone Day. Is it Twilight Zone or just Twilight? It's Twilight Zone Day. That's right.
Consider it's National Twilight Zone Day.
Yeah, that's right. I know. Where did it go? There it is. National Twilight, yes. If you will.
If you will. Consider Mark Langston on National Twilight Zone Day.
And, of course, Stamp Out Hunger Food Drive Day. There you go. Yep. Should do that all the time.
A lot of food pantries need food.
Okay. Can you take any more? World Ego Awareness Day.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know where. I can't make this stuff up.
Is there World Super Ego Awareness
Day? I'm done.
And World Id Day.
That's enough. I know. I'm done. I can't do any more.
Okay. How about the word of the day?
Oh, okay. Let's hear this.
Inveterate. Inveterate. Inveterate is a formal word used to describe someone who is always or often doing something specified.
Mm.
For instance, a person could be an inveterate liar or an inveterate prankster.
Ooh.
It can also mean firmly established by long persistence, as in an inveterate tendency to overlook the obvious.
Mm.
She's an inveterate traveler who constantly searches for flights. Carla's inveterate optimism keeps her going during challenging times.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Never inveterate.
Inveterate.
You're an inveterate.
I-N-V-E-T-E-R-A-T-E.
Okay. You're an inveterate.
Inveterate.
How you doing, inveterate?
Okay. Yeah. How about, okay, today's three-year-olds can turn on laptops and use apps. When I was three, I ate mud.
Oh, no. Those mud pies again.
Yeah. A police officer came to my house and asked me where I was between 5 and 6. He seemed irritated when I answered, kindergarten.
Wow. He didn't shoot you.
I couldn't believe it today when I came home and was told by my wife that my 5-year-old son wasn't actually mine. She says that I need to pay more attention when picking him up from school. So a worksheet for kids that a teacher gave out. It was figuring taxes, was tax worksheet.
Mm-hmm.
The question was, why do we pay taxes? The student wrote, so we don't get arrested. I just spent 45 minutes on the treadmill. Tomorrow my goal is to turn it on.
Golly.
As I watch this generation try to rewrite history, one thing I'm sure of, it will be misspelled and have no punctuation.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, speaking of police officers and getting pulled over, a police officer pulled me over and said, papers? I said, scissors. I win, and drove off. I think he wants a rematch. He's been chasing me for 45 minutes.
Oh, no. Wow.
So in the 1960s, the KGB did some fascinating psychological experiments. They learned that if you bombard human subjects with fear messages nonstop in 2 months or less, most of the subjects are completely brainwashed to believe the false message, to the point that no amount of clear information they are shown to the contrary can change their mind.
No. Please.
Did you see that photograph of Abraham Lincoln and his favorite Stratocaster taken by Keith Richards?
No. Stop it.
I envy people that grow old gracefully. They age like a fine wine. I'm aging like milk, getting sour and chunky.
I know the feeling.
When we were kids, we laughed at the commercial, help, I've fallen and I can't get up. I get it now and it's not so funny.
That's right. Can't even get up out of the chair.
If you leave Earth at the age of 15 in a spaceship at the speed of light and spend 5 years in space, when you get back on Earth, you will be 20 years old, and all your friends who were 15 when you left will be 65 years old. This phenomenon is known as the time dilation in physics. Yeah, wow. That's creepy.
That is creepy. That's very creepy. Isn't it? The audience thinks it's creepy.
Yeah. You know the original meaning of a deck of cards, playing cards?
Mm-mm.
This is really good. 52 cards for 52 weeks in the year, two colors for day and night, four suits for the four seasons, and 13 weeks per season. There's 13 cards. 12 court cards representing the 12 months.
Wow.
If we add each of the cards, ace and ace and ace and two and three and seven and eight, etc., of the game, we will get 364. Jokers were used in leap year.
Cut it out.
Isn't that weird?
That is.
And we're coming up on final exams and the end of school, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Here is a letter sent by a school principal before exams. Dear parents, the exams of your children are to start soon, and I know you are all really anxious for your child to do well. But please do remember, amongst the students who will be sitting for the exams, there is an artist who doesn't need to understand math. There's an entrepreneur who doesn't care about history or English literature. There's a musician whose chemistry marks won't matter. And there's an athlete whose physical fitness is more important than physics. If your child does get top marks, that's great. But if he or she doesn't, please don't take away their self-confidence and dignity from them. Tell them it's okay. It's just an exam. They are cut out for much bigger things in life. Tell them no matter what they score, you love them and will not judge them.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
So that's one we should probably end on, Mark.
I think that's probably the best one of the day so far.
Yeah. That is. And folks, you can have a best time by tuning into other broadcasts of St. Louis in Tune by going to stlintune.com.
Really?
That's all for this hour, and thanks for listening. If you enjoyed us, again, you can get other shows at stlintune.com. Consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or your preferred podcast platform. Your feedback helps us reach more listeners and continue to grow. We want to thank Bob Berthasell for our theme music, co-host Mark Langston, and we thank all of you out there in listener land for being a part of our community of curious minds. St. Louis in Tune is a production of Motif Media Group and the U.S. Radio Network. Remember, keep seeking, keep learning, walk worthy, and let your light shine. For St. Louis in Tune, I'm Arnold Stricker.